Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. And on this broadcast, we'll be featuring Craig Matthews. And he'll be answering your most important questions on Yellowstone, fly fishing paradise. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group Inc. doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Craig Matthews about Yellowstone Fly Fishing Paradise. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon Trophy Gray Reef and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call Platte River Fly Shop at 1-307-237-5997. Again, 1-307-237-5997. Before we introduce Craig, tonight we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Craig's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll be announcing those winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away an autographed copy of Craig Matthews' book, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide. And here's how you can win that. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. Now, the question will be about something we talk about during the show, and you'll be submitting your answer in that Q&A text box on our homepage. So you'll submit the answer along with your name and your location, and the first person to answer correctly wins Craig's book. So, and it's certainly a great companion to have along with this interview that we'll be doing tonight. Tonight our guest is Craig Matthews. Craig Matthews came to West Yellowstone, Montana in 1979 and became the town's police chief. His wife, Jackie, a police dispatcher. In 1980, they founded Blue Ribbon Flies, employing handicapped fly tires and tying flies wholesale for major retail outlets. In 1982, Craig retired from the police work, and Blue Ribbon Flies opened up their first full-line retail store. Since opening their shop, Craig has authored dozens of articles for major fly fishing publications on Yellowstone fly fishing, fishing bonefish and permit, and fly patterns and more. He has authored and co-authored 6 important books on fly fishing, Fly Patterns of Yellowstone, Fishing Yellowstone Hatches, Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, Western Fly Fishing Strategies, Fly Fishing the Madison River, and Volume 2 of Fly Patterns for the Yellowstone in 2008. Greg has also produced Telly Award-winning DVDs like Fishing Yellowstone Hatches, Tying Yellowstone Fly Patterns, Bone Fishing the Flats, and Fly Fishing the Madison. He has also developed several famous fly patterns like Sparkle Dun, X and Iris Caddis, Nature Stone Nymphs, Pops Bonefish Bitters, TDF Shrimp, Turnip Crab, and many others. NBC's Tom Brokaw says, Craig Matthews is a master fly fisher and his knowledge of Yellowstone is matchless. Craig and Jackie serve on boards of directors for the Montana Nature Conservancy, the Montana Trout Federation, the Madison-Gallatin Wild Trout Foundation, 1% for the Planet, the Yellowstone Park Foundation, and Trout Unlimited Stewardship Directors Council. Craig and Jackie and their Blue Ribbon Flies have been awarded many conservation and environmental awards. In 1997, they were presented the most prestigious award given by national parks, the Protector of Yellowstone National Park Award. This seldom given honor was presented by Yellowstone National Park in recognition of their work to preserve and protect Yellowstone for all future generations. Craig, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you. It's really great to be here tonight.
Well, with all your credentials here, I don't know how you have any time to go fishing.
I usually put in at least 150 days or partial days on our area waters.
Well, good. That's commendable with accomplishing all those other positions and on boards of directors and so forth. So, you've really contributed a lot to the fly fishing world, and we certainly all appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Well, we've got a lot to cover tonight, so I don't want to dilly-dally around here because I think we got more questions in tonight on this show than we've gotten on any show in the past, and people want to know about a lot of things about Yellowstone, and I can understand why. I was up there this summer, did a little road trip, did a little fishing, but it is kind of overwhelming when you get to the park, and it's like, where do you begin? If you haven't done your research, you could be in trouble. So hopefully we can help straighten some of these things out for folks, and I'm sure we'll do that. Well, let's just start at the beginning, Craig. Tell us what is and where is Yellowstone National Park?
Well, Yellowstone National Park is where the states of Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho come together. And each state has a portion of Yellowstone located within its boundaries. It's 2.3 million acres in size. Nowhere in the world is there more wild trout rivers and lakes and streams open to the public than there are within the boundaries of Yellowstone National Park.
And you said wild trout. You want to clarify that? Because we throw that around loosely, but...
Well, wild trout means, our trout are not planted. Mostly the fishery in Yellowstone is managed for native fishing, native fishery, West Slope cutthroats, Yellowstone cutthroats, mountain whitefish. Back when the park was founded, back in the late 1800s, there was a program to stock some of the waters with brown trout, rainbows, lake trout and such, which still inhabit a lot of the waters in Yellowstone.
But some of those, some of those are still there, and some of them they're trying to get rid of, which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, exactly, and we will touch on that later.
Good. So you kind of covered Tim Schilling's question about the species that are available there. How much of the area is actually catch and release versus put and take?
Some of the waters are catch and release. We have a mix, a management mix, if you will. Some of the waters, of course, are open to harvest, and the reason being is that fisheries managers with the Aquatic Resource Center in Yellowstone are desiring to return some of those headwater streams back to native species, and those species are primarily Yellowstone cutthroats and West Slope cutthroat. So they allow the harvest of fish, non-native species such as browns, rainbows, and brook trout in those waters.
Oh, so they're trying to work it back towards that native, totally
yes,
native kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we've got a question from Daniel Heelman, and he says, age 19, Warwick, New York. He says, hey, Craig, as an eastern angler and fishing in the Catskills of New York, I would have to argue that New York has the better trout, salmon, char fishery than any western state. From the Laura of the Catskills to the rugged Adirondacks, to the monster 20-pound Lake Ontario and Erie fish that come up into the tributaries around now, what I'm trying to ask is, why should I leave New York and go to Yellowstone? Good question. He's got a great fishery there, doesn't he?
He sure does. And, you know, I'm originally from Michigan, and a lot of those states with streams that enter into the Great Lakes have established tremendous fisheries, trout and salmon. But in Yellowstone, you know, it's exactly the way it was when it was founded back in the 1800s. And, again, we're managing to native species. Planting is no longer available in Yellowstone. So, consequently, it's a wild trout and a native trout fishery. And where else can you go and fish beside bison and grizzly bear and elk and have geysers going off around you? And when you walk 100 yards off the road, you are totally alone. People fish alongside the road, but they're not willing to spend a little bit of time and walk and get off the beaten path, so to speak. So Yellowstone remains a a real mecca. It's as wild of country as it gets in the lower 48. It's just a wonderful place to experience not only wild trout, but also all the wildlife and natural features.
Yeah, it's really a total experience.
It really is.
Yeah, there. Some of the geysers and so forth are things you'll never see, and you know, in the hot water pools and so forth are just incredibly beautiful.
Their influence in terms of minerals and whatnot into our trout streams, we have probably the most prolific insect hatches. And for the dry fly angler, there's no place like Yellowstone. You know, you've got a dozen species of caddis and over a dozen species of mayflies, midges, and whatnot, and as well as terrestrials available throughout the season. So Yellowstone truly is a fly fisher's paradise, and you can experience it just exactly as it was hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Now, are there fishing seasons there? Is that going to limit your fishing?
Yes, the season opens the Saturday before Memorial Day. So, and of course that fluctuates with Memorial Day, but it opens always the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. In other words, the Saturday preceding Memorial Day, and it's open through the first Sunday in November. So we have about a 5-month season.
And that's fairly limiting. I mean, you got to get there and get your business done.
You really do, and of course, you know, winter locks up Yellowstone in the early part of November, so it's very difficult. Access is difficult, of course, in the wintertime, and they protect the resource very well. They protect the spawning fish both in the spring as well as in the fall. And, of course, access is limited into Yellowstone all winter long, and the roads don't open to Yellowstone. They're not plowed in the springtime until 1st of May. So, consequently, you know, those fish get a real rest for 7 months out of the year. They're on hold. They're rested.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah, they must be. To give them that rest gives us more opportunity as fly fishers, I think.
You bet.
We've got a lot of questions here, and I don't want to miss anybody, but I don't want to take time to read every one of them. But let me just read off some names. And this all has to do with, you know, time of year and what's the best time to go fishing. We've got Bill in Connecticut, Deb in London, Ontario, Bob in New York, you know, Ken in Pennsylvania. All these people wrote in wondering, when is the best time to go? What's your thoughts on that, Greg?
Well, there's three best times to go. Or the best time to go is any time you can get here during fishing season because, for instance,
yeah.
If you come early in the season, and by early I mean if you come late May, 1st of June when the streams first open to fishing, when Yellowstone season opens, our general season. Rivers like the Firehole in Madison and Gibbon in Yellowstone Park are fishable. They're usually free of runoff about that time. We have tremendous emergences of two species of caddis, Brachycentrus and Hydropsyche. We also have very good pale morning duns and Betis mayflies. So if you're here in the early season, they're wonderful to fish. Along about first part of July, mid-July, most of the other streams clear. In other words, the big Yellowstone clears as snow melt. Rivers like the Lamar, streams like Slough and Soda Butte Creek clear. And throughout the month of July, if you like to dry fly fish, anything from pale morning duns, green drakes, and gray drakes will get you through. And then, of course, we have terrestrial season beginning in July. And then again in the fall. And the fall is some of my favorite time because gone are the crowds again. We basically have Yellowstone to ourselves in October. And back are the hatches, you know, on the fire hole. For instance, we'll have Betis emerging again and a couple species of caddis. We'll have the fall run-up fish coming up rivers like the Madison in Yellowstone Park. So we have a tremendous fall fishery. And then you've got the wildlife. You know, you've got bugling elk where they're gathering their harem, and you have wolves, and you've got bears getting ready for winter. So we have a tremendous opportunity to see wildlife. So really, there's three great times to be here. But any time you can get to Yellowstone, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah, it's I've been up through there now in the past couple of years, end of August and first 2 weeks in September. And, well, September to me in the Rockies is one of the best times of year.
Sure is. Yep.
It's cool. It's pretty. It's clear. Until it snows on you, but which can happen in the middle of September,
those first snowstorms really trigger some great dry fly fishing on rivers like the Firehole in Madison. It brings up tremendous Betis emergences, and you have really good dry fly fishing. And quite often I'll be standing in my shop and it's snowing and blowing and I'm trying to get out the door to fish and everybody's standing in there trying to get a cup of coffee. And I encourage people, if you're here during a snowstorm, get on the river, particularly the fire hole in Madison, the park. You'll have some of the best dry fly fishing of the year.
So we've got, well, I think we answered Clint's question. Clint was asking about fishing during the winter months. There is none because it's out of season.
That's correct.
Now, tell us a little bit about the licensing and so forth for Yellowstone and surrounding areas, because you got to kind of be careful when you cross park boundaries with the licensing, right?
You bet. When you're in Yellowstone National Park, you need a fishing permit. They come 3-day, 7-day, or season. A 3-day is $15, a 7-day is $20, and the entire season is $35, a true bargain in this day and age to fish our national park. That money does not go to Washington. It stays right in the fisheries program in Yellowstone National Park.
Now, what about, you had mentioned, it goes over. So as long as you're in the park, you just need that permit, but there are places where you're spilling over into Montana, Wyoming.
Montana, a lot of our rivers are open year-round. Certain sections of the Gallatin as well as the Madison River open year-round. But the general season, Montana's general season for all waters to open is always the third Saturday in May, and it runs through the end of November. So you can pick up a 2-day license. They come 2, 4, 6, 8 day, or if you're here beyond 6 days, it actually pays to get a 10-day license. If you fish beyond 10 days, then you want to get a season. Idaho has daily licenses as well as week-long licenses and season licenses.
And then you've got Wyoming too.
Wyoming, basically the same situation. But you have to make sure where your boundaries. In other words, if you're in the state of Montana, you need more than the fishing permit for Yellowstone National Park. Same thing in the park. A state license will not suffice. A lot of people think if they're in the park, a state of Wyoming license is all they need. That's not correct. They need a Yellowstone fly fishing permit.
And then just south, you've got Teton.
Yep, and the Teton permit also.
So that requires a separate permit.
That's right. If you're fishing in the Teton area, you're going to have to pick up a Teton National Park permit.
Trouble is, there's just so much fishing to be done up there.
Well, you know, I know.
Where do you begin?
When we moved here 30 years ago, Charlie Brooks, of course, a famous angler and author, said, "Hey, kid," he always called me kid. He said, "Don't try to do it all in your lifetime because you can't do it." And he's right, you can't. But that's where, the information, like we're part of our program tonight, the books that we've written, the DVDs we produce, there's so much information out there available on when to come, flies to use. Anglers should avail themselves of that knowledge.
Yeah, you've got quite the library that you've created yourself for the area, so our listeners should avail themselves of that, definitely. We've got some other questions here about coming out that we'll see if we can address. For instance, John Wright, New Jersey, wants to know, what are your recommendations for fly fishing Yellowstone on a limited budget?
What I recommend you do is come to Yellowstone, drive into the town of West Yellowstone. There's 6 fly shops. Go to every fly shop. Ask a lot of questions. Ask questions at the gas station, motel you stay at, restaurants you eat at. Most local people are very, very familiar with the fishing, and they're very knowledgeable, and they want to impart that knowledge to the visitors. But that's what we're in business for. That's what fly shops are there for. Stop in and ask. I always recommend you take one guide trip. And when you take that guide trip into the park, you request a guide that's familiar with the park, who loves the park, and he can impart his knowledge to you and his enthusiasm for the fishing in that park. And it pays huge dividends just to take one trip and spend one day with a knowledgeable guide.
Well, and as far as a limited budget, too, in the way of lodging and so forth, we can go on to Ari from Los Angeles, California. Is it safe to tent camp in the park, and what are the rules?
There are several tent camp areas in the park. There's also National Forest campgrounds outside of the park, right adjacent to the park. There's also budget motels. But in getting back to tent camping in the park, you have to make sure that when you go pitch a tent in the park, you do so in an organized campground that allows tent camping, and you want to practice safe food storage, and you always want to carry a can of bear spray with you. Bear spray should be carried wherever you are in Yellowstone as well as the adjacent areas, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Let's face it, the grizzly bears made a huge comeback, and it's great to see them back. But nonetheless, just pick up a $50 can of bear spray. It could save your life or a loved one's life, and learn how to use it and be prepared to use it.
Well, when you come back, we've got a couple other questions since you've started to open the conversation, the bears. I want to answer those when we get back, but we need to take a quick break, and then we'll do just that. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop has an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many resources, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Craig Matthews about Yellowstone Fly Fishing Paradise. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, before we get to those couple of bear questions, Craig, I'd like to give you an opportunity. Tell us a little bit. We've heard about your books and your DVDs and so forth that are great resources for that area for fly fishing. But tell us a little bit about your shop and what you've been up to in the fly fishing world lately.
Well, we're a full-line shop. And, again, we started in 1980. My employee, 16 guides that are all intimately familiar with Yellowstone Park. We're in the process now of writing another book. We're also working on a couple of instructional DVDs, one of which is fly tying. And hopefully that will be out sometime in the year 2009. We're always busy with our conservation work, with our 1% for the Planet work, as well as our Yellowstone Park Foundation work. And I think anyone, I'd like to put in a little plug for the Yellowstone Park Foundation, because it's there with its sole purpose to preserve and protect and fund projects to preserve and protect Yellowstone Park. And I strongly advise people, listeners, to check out YPF, www.ypf.org. Check out their website. They are responsible for the tremendous fisheries programs in and around Yellowstone. And our national parks cannot afford in these really hard financial times to fund a lot of the necessary parks, and the Park Foundation does that. So please check out their website or give them a call at 406-586-6303 and have them send you out an information kit on all the exciting things that people can become involved in Yellowstone Park. And that's really what we do at our business at Blue Ribbon Flies. We have a strong conservation presence, and we urge all our guides and all our shop help to join us in assisting these programs of conservation in and around Yellowstone.
Terrific, terrific. And what about also your website address and phone number there in case they want to go on?
Our website simply is blueribbonflies.com. They can go to our website, and I encourage you to do so and check it out, and then you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter, email newsletter, which is jam-packed full of photos of the week. We give you a fishing report, what's going on in the Yellowstone area at the time. I did one today, and I have to admit it's been below zero for the last week, so we haven't done any fishing. We've done a lot of fly tying. But we feature new flies, fly tying materials, fly tying hints. We do a lot of travel trips from Chile and Argentina to Belize and Mexico and the Bahamas. A lot of tips for bone fishermen. And they can learn about, the conservation stuff that's happening here. One big one we're working on now is Trust for Public Lands and Montana Land Reliance to complete a 200,000-acre easement program in the Madison Valley to protect wildlife corridors. We work a lot with Patagonia Incorporated on these programs through 1% for the Planet. And I also urge people to check out 1percentfortheplanet.org and spell out 1percentfortheplanet.org, and you'll see what we're up to there, too.
Terrific, terrific. Well, great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Craig.
And sounds like I'd like to mention, too, We've done $14 million this year for conservation through 1%, so do take a look at that.
Wow, wow, that's a lot. Funny how how much 1% can accumulate too, huh?
It sure is, yeah. And Yvon Chouinard and I, the owner of Patagonia and I, Yvon Chouinard started this program a few years ago, and we're up to 1,000 members now, and again, we'll do $14 million this year for conservation.
Wow, wow, terrific. Tell us a little bit more about these bears. We've got some questions. Dennis and Helena Montana wants to know about fishing remote areas of the park and if that's a problem with bears. And then Andy Cordova wants to know specifically about Slough Creek, who's told not to fish there because of bears. Just in general, you had mentioned bear spray, but another question was, can you fish alone? Is that a wise situation?
There
Maybe
are
you can lump all that
places.
Together.
Okay, there are several places in Yellowstone, for instance, the Upper Gallatin and the Bighorn Pass Trail, where a minimum of 3 anglers is required to go in to fish. Sometimes, like the Slough Creek Trail, will require 2 or 3 anglers, depending on the bear situation, the bear activity. The bear activity is closely monitored in Yellowstone, and that's why Yellowstone has a very good safety record over the last few years regarding bears and human conflict. Slough Creek last year, I know they had 1 closure because a bear had a kill, and they'll close a certain section of stream. I fish Slough Creek, and we do backcountry trips into Slough Creek every year. Believe me, it's kind of a rare deal to see a bear, but they're always around in Slough Creek. But these bears are used to people, and they'll avoid people. They're basically wild bears, and they do anything and everything just to stay away from you. However, you know, should you run into a sow with a cub, that's when you're going to need your bear spray, and that's why you should always have bear spray with you.
When you say you have to have 2 or 3 people to go into a particular area, the rule of thumb there is always pick somebody that runs slower than you, right?
That's right.
Pick your partners wisely.
Well, I'll tell you, wherever you go in Yellowstone, you have a chance you are in bear country, and you have a chance of seeing a bear. But just use your head, make noise, carry bear spray, and I'll guarantee you 9 out of 10 times you're not even going to see a bear.
Right, right, yeah. It only takes once, right?
It only takes once, and I've had 2 of those instances in Yellowstone in the 30-some years that I've been here.
Wow.
And both
wow.
times I was with our oldest daughter, and she still has nightmares, but those were pre-bear spray years.
Oh.
And we were not making a lot of noise, and the wind was wrong, and we ran it right into a bear.
Oh,
grizzlies both times and were charged. But there again, you know, if you have bear spray, you're going to avoid those problems.
Let's say you don't have the spray, you've forgotten it, or you can't find it, or whatever. What's the other thing that they advise to do?
Well, stand your ground. Don't make eye contact. Look as big as you can. Hold your arms out, and don't scream at the bear, but talk to the bear. Generally, they're very inquisitive, or they're puzzled. They have very poor eyesight, and they just want to know what you are. You don't want to run. If you run, they're liable to swat you. You want to just stand there and talk to them in a very stern voice, but don't raise your voice. Just talk to them very sternly, and 99 out of 100 times they are long gone once they figure out what you are.
They'll just move on.
Yeah. I think a bigger danger is a moose, a cow moose with a calf.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of instances with that, and there again, just look big and talk to them, and once they find out what you are, they're gone.
Yeah, I had that experience in Alaska when I was a kid, walking to school, and fools that we were throwing snowballs at a mother moose and didn't know she had a calf, and she chased us up one of those fire towers in a playground area, and so we scrambled up that, and we were stuck up there, and I lived on the Air Force base, and the Air Police had to come and rescue us. Of course, we were late for school, dragged into the principal's office and everything else. But we still had our lives anyway. But, yeah, they can be dangerous, especially if you're foolish. That's
you
for
bet.
Sure.
Yes, they can.
We have a question here, and you kind of addressed this before, but I want to walk our way through this. Jim in Gallatin, Tennessee, says, each year I travel to the Yellowstone area for vacation and fly fishing. Many times I go to fly shops for suggestions. This could be West Yellowstone, Jackson Hole, or where, anywhere around the area. I'm not met with a lot of support. Most of the time I'm given bad advice. I had people there tell me that I don't use their guide. If I don't use their guides, then they don't care. Is there any truth to this, and why do I receive such bad info? And before you answer that, Craig, I got some of your fans here that kind of answer that question for you, I think. Dan Stockton in Buena Vista, Colorado. This isn't a question but a comment on Craig's Fly Shop. Blue Ribbon Flies, in my experience, is one of the best shops in the West. The staff is always friendly and helpful with in any way that they can help. When I hit West Yellowstone, Blue Ribbon Flies is my first stop. Then John French, Southern California. Craig, I'd like to thank you and all of your staff for all the help when visiting Yellowstone. You've always pointed me in the right direction with the hot fly patterns. The video you did was wonderful. I hope you will have a few more stories to tell us in this interview. And he says, please say hello to one of your guides that helped him out. But
great. That's
so you've got a good reputation, and Jim, I'd head over to Blue Ribbon Flies if I were you the next time you're up in West Yellowstone, and I think you'll get what you're looking for there. But
I can guarantee that. And also, Jim, doggone it, Coach Jeff Fisher is a very good friend of mine of the Tennessee Titans, and we're all Titans fans. So you come in, and you'll probably see Jeff hanging around, and we'll direct you the right place.
And I know he will get the kind of service he's looking for. Hey, there's plenty of, I think that's wherever you go, you know, if you don't feel you're treated right, go next door.
Well, that's the beauty of West Yellowstone. With six fly shops, you've got a variety, and you've got a lot of very knowledgeable people there.
Yeah, yeah. And you might just catch a guy on a bad day, too. So
sure. Yep.
You want to give somebody a second chance as well. Well, I've got your book here, Craig, and you kind of broke down the park into four major sections. And I want to have you try to help us digest the park here a bit, because it truly is, you know, more than we can even attempt to cover in one evening. But maybe if you could tell us about the sections and maybe a little bit about the types of water that we might be fishing in these sections, and give us a little overview.
Sure. You know, we broke, initially when we wrote the book, we broke the park into four sections by reason of the fact that there's a network of roads that traverse the park, and they're called loop roads. The first section that we'll refer to is the northwest section, which is at the west entrance, which is where our business is, West Yellowstone, Montana. And from there, as you travel into the park, of course, you're going to go right up the Madison River, and you have rivers like the Madison, you have rivers like the Firehole and Gibbon, which two rivers join, form the Madison. You also have Mammoth and, of course, the Gardner River at the north entrance. It's a wonderful area to fish. It has Spring Creek-like water in terms of Firehole. It also has, it's well-blessed with three-stoners like the Gallatin. But really, you know, the Chalk Stream and the Spring Creek-like water is what a lot of people come for, and that, of course, is the Madison and the Park, as well as the Firehole. The Gardner is more of a freestone river. The Gibbon has a little bit of everything. It has meadow water, tremendous hatches. The largest brown trout in Yellowstone River, in the Yellowstone Park are in the Gibbon River, in the meadow stretches up above the falls. Some fish up to 13 and 14 pounds. Mm. The Gallatin River has it all if you're willing to hike up into the Bighorn. It's Spring Creek-like, and there's some big rainbows up there. That's big-time bear country, so, of course, bring your bear spray. The next section, and I think this is where you want to go with this, right, Roger? The next section is the northeast section of the park. That's the east entrance, where you have such features as Canyon Junction and Tower Junction. Also in the northeast is of course, the north entrance at Gardner, Montana, and Cody, Wyoming, which is about an hour east of Yellowstone National Park's east entrance. It's a wonderful area to fish, the northeast section. You have rivers like the Lamar. You have rivers like, or streams like Soda Butte and Slough Creek, Pebble Creek. You have a lot of off-the-beaten-path waters if you're willing to spend a short time and walk into them. Tremendous diversity of insect hatches. You have cutthroats, browns, rainbows, huge brook trout in some of the ponds. You have it all in the northeast as well as the northwest sections of the park. The southeast section of the park is basically accessible from Jackson, Wyoming. It's about an hour south of Yellowstone National Park's south boundary is the town of Jackson. It's the section where you can expect pretty much all water types. You have the Snake River, the Heart River, a lot of lake fishing, Lewis Lake, Shoshone Lake. just a wonderful area to fish. Parts of the fire hole, the upper fire hole, Nez Perce section is in there too. Nez Perce Creek, Magpie Creek, a lot of small streams with some very large trout that run up the smaller tributaries of the fire hole to escape warm water influence in the heat of the summer. The final section that we talk about is the southwest section. And this is the thoroughfare section in Yellowstone, basically Yellowstone Lake section of the park. The thoroughfare section is the wildest piece of real estate in the lower 48. And again, this section comprises Yellowstone Lake. You owe it to yourself to spend some time in Yellowstone Lake and experience the tremendous Yellowstone fishery that it is. And we'll talk a little bit about lake trout and the problems there. But Yellowstone Lake is still a tremendous fishery in itself, as is the thoroughfare section.
Now, these sections, I want to give people an idea of distance between one section and another drive time.
Yeah, for instance, when you come in at the west entrance at West Yellowstone, and for instance, if you're going to drive out the east entrance to Cody, that's about a two-hour drive just to get to the east entrance. Yellowstone, again, is 2.3 million acres. It's a very large park, and the 45-mile-an-hour speed limit is strictly enforced. For instance, if you went from the west entrance out the south entrance to the town of Jackson, that's about a two-hour drive, and it's approximately 120 miles to get to Jackson. From West Yellowstone to Canyon is a 55-mile drive, and that's about in the center of Yellowstone Park. Going to the north, if you drive Highway 191 from West Yellowstone towards Bozeman, from mile marker 11 miles northwest Yellowstone to mile marker 31, you're in Yellowstone Park. So for 20 miles, you're in Yellowstone Park before you leave the park on your way north to Bozeman. So it's a huge piece of real estate, but the road system is very good, but I caution people to drive very carefully and very slowly because of the wildlife.
Yeah, and that's those times you gave are without any stops for wildlife viewing and construction.
That's right. Construction is pretty well completed in the park for the time being, but boy, you can hit a bear jam. And for instance, if someone's leaving West Yellowstone, say they're staying in West Yellowstone and they want to fish Slough Creek, which is 60 miles away, if you get in the park around 7:30, before 8 o'clock, it's going to take you an hour and 15 minutes to get there. But if you get in the park after 8 o'clock and you hit a bear jam, it could take 2 to 2.5 hours. So if you're getting there in the middle of the summer to fish, get on the road, get through the gate, and avoid the bear jams.
We were staying in a couple of places, but one time we were staying out of the north entrance, actually up at Chico Hot Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I dropped some family off there at the north entrance and drove down to the Madison, which, like you said, might have been an hour drive. But I passed a bison, a big bull bison. He was the only one there in this meadow next to the road on the way down, and there were cars all over watching him, and he's putting on a show. And I went down, fished the whole morning, drove back, and the bison's still out there, and there's still cars all over the place. I guess he had an extra long performance that day or something, but I couldn't believe what a show-off he was. That can really back things up, and there's nothing you can really do about it but be patient. So
that's right. You have to be patient and wait for traffic to clear.
But that day, I also spent about 3 hours on the Madison down there by the side of the road. Nobody else around. Nobody else.
Isn't that the truth? Yep.
And I couldn't believe it. I expected, you know, a lot more people fishing, but it wasn't crowded. It wasn't crowded at all. And that was the end of August. So.
Often, you know, you see people whizzing along as you fish the rivers, and they're in such a hurry to drive through the park to get to the IMAX so they can go and take in the IMAX a movie about what they just drove by so quickly to get through. I've never understood people, but that's people.
Well, we've got some very specific questions about areas of the park that I'm hoping you can answer. But before we do that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to some of those specifics.
Okay, great.
The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. Is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the support that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. And if you're already a member, go ahead and send them a donation. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Were you listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio? And we're talking with Craig Matthews about Yellowstone Fly Fishing Paradise. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, go to our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, I'm going to go and look at a few of these questions, Craig, that we have online. I think we asked Joe's question about before or after 4th of July. It's all depending on what you're looking for. The other thing you might want to do is get Craig's book and look at the hatch chart. If there's a particular hatch or insect you're looking for, then that might determine when you might come as well. Okay, this is an interesting. Larry Hall in Indiana River, Michigan says, I've never traveled west to fish, but I've talked with others who have. They all say the western fly fishing is much less technical than that in the east and midwest. Throw your fly in the water and the trout race each other to get there first. Have you fished in the east? Can you comment on the comparison?
Well, I was born and raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I spent a lot of time there fishing. And while we do have a lot of the water, as he's referring to, a lot of basically what I call wilderness fly fishing, a lot of trout that have never seen a fly, if you want to walk, you can get into those places. But if you hit our Spring Creek waters, such as the Fire Hole and Slough Creek and a lot of smooth water sections, even the Yellowstone River with its cutthroat, a lot of people say, oh, they're so easy to catch. But believe me, after they've seen a week's worth of flies and pretty much every fly from Maine to California, these fish get really quickly educated. Our Madison River, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you could use a Royal Wolf pretty much any time of the year and catch a lot of fish. It's no longer that way. You know, these fish have become very seasoned, and they become very difficult, particularly in the Spring Creek-like waters. So, again, you know, we do have some areas, some backcountry water, where you can catch literally a fish a cast, and then we have waters that demand the most. You're on your hands and knees, long leaders, fine tippets, and small dry flies.
Yeah, I've never personally found it that easy fishing.
Well, you know, if you fish the lower fire hole where it's like a chalk stream of Spring Creek, they're very difficult. But if you get on the upper fire hole where you have to walk 45 minutes, you'll find the fishing a whole lot easier.
Yeah. The secret is to get back in, spend a little time.
Yep, spend a little bit of time.
And then you get to see more of the beautiful country, too.
Exactly.
Question from Dan Crowthers in Bismarck, North Dakota. He says he's fished Yellowstone a few times. He says he's always fishing in fear that he's in or near a closed area. Where can I get a good map that shows these closed areas, or how do you find out about these closed areas to stay legal?
When you pick up your fishing permit, you're furnished a very good map that will show the closed areas for that year, and they change every year, depending on wildlife movement, spawning, research. So you really have to be on top of things, and you want to really take a look at that map that they furnish you. Also, along most streams, if they are closed, they'll be posted closed to fishing, and the reason why. So you have to be on your toes a little bit. You just don't want to drive in and start fishing anywhere and everywhere. But check for signs that, you know, posted that close for closures, and also avail yourself of that map that they give you when you get your fishing permit.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened to me this summer is the guy marked very distinctly on the map what those areas were and where the catch and release was and pointed those out. He's very helpful. So, and let's see, we have a question from Jeremy in Boulder, Colorado. Are there any big lake resident cutthroats that run into the rivers to spawn? Is it possible to target these without disturbing reds?
Well, you know, in light of the cutthroat lake trout problem in Yellowstone Lake, and we should touch upon that here pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But pretty much every cutthroat now that runs And here they run downstream for the most part. They drop downstream of the lake into the Yellowstone. Those fish are absolutely enormous now. Where they used to be 17, 18 inches, we're catching fish 23, 24 inches, and they're very healthy, fat fish. And the reason being, of course, is because of the predation on lake trout has diminished the population of cutthroat trout in that ecosystem, Yellowstone Lake and Yellowstone River. Again, and I can't stress strongly enough, you know, if you're interested in that situation to, you know, go to ypf.org and look at their website and what you can do to help out in that fight to keep the Yellowstone cutthroat fishery a viable fishery. But that's one place where you can catch very large cutthroat after the spawn, and the season doesn't open until they're finished spawning. And the season does not open until the 15th of July, and by then the fish are done spawning. And if you walk the bank, if you like to hunt big fish and just walk the bank and search for pods of big cutthroat rising to small dry flies, this is a real challenge, and that's a way to catch some very, very large Yellowstone cutthroat.
Great, great. Well, let's hit a couple of these other questions that people wrote in advance on. Mike Ormsby, Ontario, Canada, if there's only one river in Yellowstone National Park that you could fish, what would that be?
The Firehole.
Firehole.
Yep.
Okay. And what would you say are the top five places to fish in Yellowstone for someone who has never fished in the area before? And that's from Andre Beltran in Los Angeles.
Boy, that's a great question. It's a pretty tough question because a lot of it depends on the time you're here, the time you decide to come. But I would like to think that you'd come latter part of June so that you could fish the Firehole and Madison in the park. Also by then, Slough Creek and the Lamar River should be clearing. Those would be two more. Gosh, flip a coin, either the Yellowstone River or the Gardner River. Those are my favorite rivers to fish, and you could do that the last week of June, first week of July. You could fish them all. They offer a tremendous diversity of insect emergences. You've got caddis. You've got two stoneflies. You've got the giant stone as well as the golden stone. You've got midges. You've got so many species of mayflies from pale morning duns and betas all the way to green drakes that will come off at that time. You're just in dry fly overload, and it's a tough pick every day to decide where to go because you're going to have tremendous dry fly fishing.
And I think that kind of answers a few of these other questions that we've had on, you know, where and when the best times to come are. Also, I would assume, we've got a bunch of questions coming up about backcountry fishing, but if you go too early in the year, that's probably hard to get back in some of those areas, I would assume.
You know, if you come too early, you're going to run into, number one, you're going to run into generally high water with snowmelt. You're also going to run into muddy trails and a lot of closed trails. They'll close trails, keep trails closed in the spring just to prevent them from being, torn apart by horse traffic and walking anglers. And, that can really, really mess up a trail, so to speak. So I don't recommend, if you're looking for backcountry trips, I don't recommend coming much before July 4th. And I recommend always checking in with the backcountry office in Yellowstone National Park. Those people are very knowledgeable, and they'll tell you trail closures, what's closed and what isn't. And it's just a phone call away. If you have a pen and pencil, you can call their backcountry office, or you can write it. Their address is P.O. Box 168, YNP, Yellowstone National Park, Wyoming, 82190. Or just simply pick up the phone and call 307-344-2160. And those people are very knowledgeable on what trails are open, what trails are closed, and the condition of every trail.
Well, since we're talking about that, we've got some questions specifically. Again, a suggestion from you, Ted Hasselbring, Nashville, Tennessee. Can you suggest two or three places it'd be possible to backpack in for fishing?
One, you have to. You got to experience Slough Creek. And you can get any campsite that you can get on Slough Creek in the backcountry is going to be a good campsite. Any campsite in Yellowstone National Park. And again, you want to call that backcountry office and get an application or check in and see if you can get a campsite. Slough Creek would definitely be one of them. Another good one is the Upper Gallatin. There's campsites up on the Bighorn Pass. A very good experience, a lot of wildlife, and just a gorgeous place to fish. Finally, the list goes on and on and on, but I would really consider Upper Lamar River. The Lamar River is one place where you will catch fish, as the gentleman referred to earlier, where you'll actually catch so many fish you kind of get tired of catching big, beautiful cutthroats. And it's a hike in, but believe me, you will catch so many fish, you'll kind of quit about mid-noon and take a nap.
Now, are these day hikes or are these camp?
These are all overnight. These are all overnight backcountry trips. Certainly, Slough Creek, you can do it in a day. You can hike up to the first or second or even third meadow on Slough Creek, 45-minute to an hour-and-a-half hike. Mm-hmm. Be in a backcountry situation. You won't be alone on Slough Creek ever. There's a lot of traffic up to Slough Creek, and rightfully so, because it's a wonderful fishery. Lamar River, you'll probably be alone up there, as you will on the Upper Gallatin. So there are places you can get away from an off-beaten path.
How much time, and do you have to reserve those campsites, the backcountry campsites?
Yes, and that's why I really stress that you get a hold of the backcountry office. Some campsites are you're able to reserve. Others are on a first-come, first-served basis. And that can change from year to year, too. So it's always best to call the backcountry office, find out their policy regarding campsites. They'll also send you a map of all the backcountry sites, and you can just kind of pick and choose accordingly.
And what about in general? I'm assuming there's probably more availability of the backcountry sites, but the car camping, you know, the campgrounds and so forth, are advanced reservations required or recommended?
They're not required, but in the heat of the season, it's a pretty good idea to reserve one. But then again, you know, even when tourist season is at its height, anytime from the 4th of July through the end of August, if you get there in the morning when campers are leaving, you can generally get a spot.
Okay.
But I wouldn't advise you arriving at 4 p.m. because you're going to be all
okay.
taken.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, wrong time of day. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I think you've given them several suggestions there that cover a lot of these. One from Chris in New Jersey. I'm interested in your recommendations for smaller streams between Mammoth and the Lamar Valley. Not afraid to hike a bit, looking for some solitude.
Boy, there's so many. One of my favorites is Blacktail Deer Creek, either upstream or downstream. There will be a bunch of cars parked right at the trailhead because that's a great staging area for guys that are horsepacking or hiking. Generally, the only fishing pressure it gets is right there on the Mammoth to Tower Road. Another one is Tower Creek at Tower Junction. Elk Creek, which is also between Mammoth and Tower on your way to the Lamar. Gosh, the list goes on and on. Lava Creek, the upper Gardner River. They're all very good fisheries. They hold some surprises in terms of size, and you'll be basically by yourself. And that's why, you know, I say, get yourself a good map, or, you know, there's a couple books on, you know, ours, of course, is one of them, the Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, but it's money well spent. And just plan on fishing two or three of these streams. If there's one problem that I see the visiting angler basically make is they try to do too much. You know, if you're here for a week, pick a couple of rivers and streams and fish those. Don't try to do a different one every day because it takes a day or two to get to learn them. So, you know, pick a couple of them and get to learn them, and the next time you come back, do the same thing. Pick two or three others, and you'll really be glad you did that.
Well, it seems from what you've said and from what I've seen is the variety, it's so diverse. I mean, from these small mountain streams to these spring creek wide, you know, rivers to, I mean, everything, freestone, everything's there,
yeah.
Lakes,
well, and,
beaver
pond. You have to be so prepared, Roger. So many times, you know, you'll start out on a freestoner, and one in particular I can think of is Grayling Creek, just north of West Yellowstone in Yellowstone Park. And you start on it, and you're fishing a little Royal Wolf, and you're fishing the bumpy water, and you're catching small cutthroats and rainbows. Next thing you know, you're in a Spring Creek-like stretch, and you got to change tactics because you've got some big fish sipping midges or betas mayflies, and you know, you got to be able to change to take the larger fish. You have to be able to you have to be prepared to fish all different water types when you fish Yellowstone.
Well, let's talk a little bit about equipment. Since you just started talking about that, we do have a couple questions from Camillo in Westford, Massachusetts, Jack in Cheyenne, Wyoming, wanting to know what basic tackle you should bring to Yellowstone to cover the bases there. And, we're talking about rod reel size, I think.
Yep. If you have an 8.5 or a 9 foot, I prefer a 9 foot, but an 8.5 works really well. Rod for either a 4 or a 5 weight, I prefer a 5, but quite often I'll fish 4s if I'm fishing the fire hole and smaller spring creeks. But a 4 or 5 rod, a reel, you know, like an LRH or a Hardy LRH or a Lamson Lightspeed or a Ross Evolution, where you can put just a little bit of backing. And I prefer a weight forward line, you know, just because you can put a little bit more backing. It doesn't take up the space that a double taper line takes up. That's all you need. Certainly bring a net. I used to advocate not using a net, but I think it's a lot easier on fish, and you sure save a lot of flies using a net. Good pair of waders, felt soles. Don't come out with cleated rubber soles, because you will be on your hind end most of the time trying to wade some of these rivers of ours. And there again, and I should mention this, a lot of guys think they have to wade up to their armpits or their chin to fish these rivers. Wade as little as you possibly can. Most of the fish you're fishing to are right on the bank. Simply, I wear waders most of the time because I sit on my hind end and scooch along to get close to the fish.
Mm-hmm. Good. We got a specific question here from Len Hoskin in England. And Len wants to know, he likes to fish the Madison River from the bank between Quake Lake and Lions Bridge. In the summer months, can you please suggest a good rig setup, 1 or 2 flies with or without weight? How far apart place the flies? Do you fish a 2-fly rig when you fish? Or?
You know, sometimes, particularly visiting anglers do, until they figure out the insect hatches. In other words, if midges are on the water in the morning and you want to fish rising fish, you can fish rising fish almost any day of the year on the Madison just by walking the bank and searching for them, particularly in the water that he's referring to. That's kind of my home water. I spend a lot of time on it, and I do a lot of fishing on the Madison, scooching along in my hind end and fishing very close in. I'll look for rising fish. I will not use a 2-fly setup because I've done a little bit of research, and I know what's going to be coming off. In other words, if pale morning duns are going to come off in July, I'll be fishing a singular pale morning dun nymph to start the day. Once the fish start taking duns, it's readily apparent what they're doing, and I'll switch to a sparkle dun imitation, and then, of course, later on you may see fish head and tailing to spinners. The Madison is one of those rivers, you do what the river tells you to do. It reads like an open book. If you spend a little bit of time and observe that river, you're going to see what's going on, what the fish are feeding on, and you make the appropriate fly choice. Certainly in the summertime, you may have mayflies and caddis on the water at the same time, and there you got to study rise form a little bit. But I'll guarantee if you're willing to switch flies a couple of times, you don't have to use a 2-fly setup. In a 2-fly setup, it seems like you're always tangled, or you're hooking yourself with one of the flies, or you're losing a fly. I think you'd do a lot better just doing your homework and doing what the river tells you to do.
Spend the time looking at the river rather than untangling your rig. Yeah.
So many anglers come up and they tie 2 flies on automatically, and they get in the middle of the river and they just start wading up the river. They're waiting where the fish are, first of all. They're spooking all the fish. And they're doing nothing but getting a good workout. If you sit on that bank and you watch fish behavior and you watch what they're rising to or what nymphs they're feeding on, and you do your homework, you know what hatches to expect, you're going to do really well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Craig, we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about those strategies.
Great.
Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers Online Magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod-making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod-maker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Craig Matthews about Yellowstone Fly Fishing Paradise. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us a question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many as possible on the show tonight. I'm going to have you cover this rather quickly here, Craig, but we did have a lot of questions about use of drift boats, float tubes, kayaks, what are or what are not allowed, pontoon boats I see here too. Can any of those or all of those be used in the park?
No. On any moving water, none of those are allowed. There are certain lakes, such as Lewis Lake and Yellowstone Lake, where you're allowed to use some motorized craft. Other lakes are strictly hand power or foot powered pontoon boats. You really, and the list goes on and on. We could spend an hour talking about it. But again, check with the park, check and get a copy of the regulations, and go from there. You're also required to use a Yellowstone float permit, which you have to purchase when you get to Yellowstone, and that permit goes right on the side of your boat. In other words, you just can't show up and start roaring around. You have to purchase a Yellowstone float permit.
Okay. So no drift boats or rafts at all. And,
the only place you could are on some of the lakes, like Yellowstone Lake and Lewis Lake, but you should check regulations before you do that.
Yeah. So pretty much walk and wade when we're
fishing. Pretty much walk and wade, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about flies here. You kind of ran through it before, the different hatches in the park, and I think you had said it, maybe you could repeat that again. What are some of the major hatches that you'd love to see there in the park?
Well, years ago we wrote a book called Fishing Yellowstone Hatches, which unfortunately is out of print right now. But what we tried to do is simplify. In Yellowstone, you have perhaps a dozen mayflies and 10 caddis, along with midges and damselflies, dragonflies, and terrestrials. And that's what brings the trout to the surface. A lot of people think, my God, there's hundreds and hundreds of species of caddis in the park. No, that's not true. While there may be hundreds and hundreds of species of caddis, there's only about a dozen that will bring the trout to the surface. So if you have, and we use the scientific names for the caddis, Brachycentris, which is an olive, 16 caddis. We have Hydropsyche. Those are really the two big caddis in Yellowstone. If you're prepared with patterns of those two species of caddis, Extic caddis, X2 caddis, and Iris caddis, you're going to be pretty much prepared to fish most major rivers in Yellowstone. If you're fishing the Firehole, you're going to want to throw in a couple more. You're going to want to throw in a Glossosoma, which is a tiny black caddis, size 20, and a Lepidostoma, which is an olive caddis, size 18. For mayflies, the primary species, and you can't come to Yellowstone without these, a size 16 pale morning dun, a size 20, 22 blueing olive, a little betis, gray drake, and about a size 12. Also a fall green drake, which primarily shows up on rivers like the Lamar, Slough, Soda Butte late in the fall. It's a Timpanogos hecuba. We call it the drake mackerel, again, size 12, and it's tied tan with a strong ribbing. We use a sparkle dun. Green drake, size 12. And basically, with those mayflies, you're ready to rock and roll.
That's still quite a few. you're covering a lot of ground there. I mean, that's
And there again, if you avail yourself of the information that's out there on the DVDs and the books that have been published, and you kind of study the hatches and you tie or purchase flies that basically you'll need during the time frame you're going to be here, you're going to be in great shape. I know when I first came to Yellowstone in 1970 as a kid, and there wasn't a lot of information out there. I tied hundreds and hundreds of flies expecting all these big emergences when, in fact, there was a couple of species of mayflies and a couple of caddis, and that's all I really needed in a stonefly.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
so much information out there. Just get the flies that you need.
What you said earlier was, I think, really on target, which is see how much time you have to spend there. Pick an area, narrow it down to a couple of rivers or creeks, and then get the local information about those, and you'll narrow the number of flies down that you'll need to have to,
exactly.
to probably rather few.
Yep.
And rather than trying to fish the whole park and have everything in your box, seems like that might be the wise direction to go.
Well, and we do a program, it's called Secrets of the Pros, where people will call in and say, okay, I'm going to be here in Yellowstone at this week. I need a box of flies. So we assemble about four dozen flies in a box, label them, and give them directions on where to fish them and how to fish them. And everybody always says, my gosh, you know, I can't believe it. When you sent me those 4 dozen flies, I thought you were really shorting me. I thought I'd need, you know, 10 or 12 dozen, but really this is all I needed. And generally speaking, that's all you need is just a couple dozen flies for a certain time period, and you're ready to go.
So there it is. Pick your spot, call Blue Ribbon Flies up. They'll send you the box. You're all set, right?
That's right.
That's terrific. That's terrific. Question, Roger, Cheyenne, Wyoming, wants to know about the salmon fly hatch specifically. What week would you pick to try to hit that? And I suppose you have to pick
a
spot.
Okay, and that's a crapshoot. If you hit it 1 year and three, you're doing really well on most streams. If you want to fish it on the Madison River outside Yellowstone Park, if you come the 22nd of June to the 4th of July during that time frame, you will hit the salmon fly. If you want to fish it early in the season in Yellowstone Park itself, bear in mind these are thermally influenced streams such as the Firehole and the Madison in the park. That emergence takes place much earlier. So if you come, generally by the 1st of June, we have salmon flies going in Yellowstone, on the Firehole and Firehole Canyon, as well as the Madison River in Yellowstone Park. So there again, you can hit it much earlier if you come in early June on park stretches.
And by the way, Roger and Cheyenne, we have a show that we did with Bob Jaspers on salmon fly hatch on the Madison, mainly dealing outside the park, but that might give you some additional information on that. Some strategy questions here. How do water temperatures in rivers such as the Firehole affect fish feeding and hatches? Does the temperature stabilize further down the river you go? And maybe you want to explain that to folks.
Well, actually, the Firehole is warmer as you go downstream. It picks up a lot more thermal influence as it goes downstream. Usually the higher you are up on the Firehole, the temperatures remain favorable to trout feeding. But you have to remember, these trout have lived in the Firehole River for decades, and they have become very accustomed to those warmer temperatures. I've seen trout rise to dry flies when the temperature has been 80 degrees. Now, when the temperature gets such that the park will close the Firehole, they'll close sections of the river to fishing just to avoid the stress of those, the stress situation that those warm temperatures can cause.
So you have the thermal, the springs dumping in that are affecting the temperature, as well as low water levels and season, I take it.
That's correct. And, you know, the rivers that you have to concern yourself in Yellowstone, that's why I always tell people if they want to fish Firehole in the early season, come before the 4th of July, because every now and then, now this past year they did not shut her down, but for 2 years they did, they'll close the river when the water temperature gets too warm for trout, for the comfort and the safety of the trout, so they'll shut her down. So, and generally that's about the 4th of July when that happens. And they'll keep it closed until rivers cool, and usually that's about the 20th of August. So you may have a river like the Firehole closed for 6 weeks during the course of the season. Seldom does that happen, but it's possible. Of course, during that time period, there's so many of the other streams to fish that you don't even consider the Firehole again until fall.
Right. Question from Gary Powell in Memphis, Tennessee, and he also spends time in Jackson Hole. Craig, how is the fishing different in Yellowstone during and after heavy snow winters like this past one?
Boy, this year was a son of a gun in terms of runoff. We had a very huge snowpack and a very late runoff, which can really present some challenges on where to fish. And again, that's the beauty of having a river like the Firehole, because the Firehole fished from opening day on. It doesn't experience those runoff problems that other rivers do. It's basically obsidian soil, obsidian sand on the Firehole system, and consequently, it fishes pretty much all season long. You have to be flexible. You may have to change your plans a little bit. You know, if you come here to fish the Yellowstone River early in the section where it's open in June, chances are you're not going to fish it, even on a normal year or even on a low water year. But there's always water to fish in and around Yellowstone should we have a big runoff.
Another question, Kevin Kutzer in Wilson, Wyoming. Could you please spend some time discussing lake ice out fishing in the park as far as types of lines, equipment, and so forth. Is is there that kind of fishing, given the seasonal aspect of things?
Yeah, there can be. Sometimes Yellowstone Lake, the ice will still be on Yellowstone Lake when it opens in mid-June. I've seen that before. Certainly on Shoshone Lake and Lewis Lake, there will often be ice on opening day. If you're ever here when the ice goes out or when you have open water between the shoreline and the ice, which quite often you'll do, you'll have 30 feet of fishable water, it's an absolutely, it's incredible the number of fish you'll catch, not only in midge pupa but also on streamers. I don't really advocate the use of sinking lines in those cases because the water isn't that deep. You know, from the shore to the ice pack is again 30 feet, and at most the depth will be 6 feet, and you can adequately do that just with a floating line with a sinker should you need to weight your fly or put additional weight on. It's a wonderful time to be here. Very few people are here then just because it's hard to plan. But, you know, living in Wilson, man, he should be able to fish a lot of these secret little lakes in and around Yellowstone and do very, very well. A good friend of mine, Paul Bruhn, who writes for the Jackson Hole paper, writes a lot of articles about ice out fishing, and that's another source of information. Paul spends a lot of time searching out those lakes, and I strongly advise the gentleman from Wilson to take a look at that Jackson Hole paper around the time of ice out.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. We're running short of time, but I know how concerned you are and involved you are in conservation efforts and so forth. So let's spend the last few minutes talking about a few of those situations. And as we said earlier, the lake trout situation up there is something everybody wants to know. So can you just give us a briefing on that? And rather than me reading all the questions about it, I think you can probably cover what we need to know here quickly.
Well, of course, and I believe it was 1994 when the lake trout issue really came to the forefront. It's been a huge concern, and the preservation of Yellowstone Lake's cutthroat trout is one of the biggest ongoing efforts in Yellowstone Park, and is a very expensive effort. I can't recall the exact dollar amount, but it's funded by through the federal government. Initially, we had a hard time getting funding, but again, the Yellowstone Park Foundation stepped up, found a source of funding, and we've been able to tackle that. Since then, it's close to 300,000 lake trout have been removed from Yellowstone Lake through this gill netting effort, through the USS Freedom, which is the little boat that they use to gill net these fish. And, for instance, in 2007, they're getting so efficient with this netting effort that of the mature lake trout caught in the spawning areas in Yellowstone Lake, about 95% were removed even before they were able to spawn. So biologists through the Aquatic Resource Center are able to find where they're spawning, when they're spawning, and effectively net those big spawning fish out. They take, you know, several years to sexually mature. So they're able to find these places where these mature fish are spawning, and they're able to eradicate a lot of those fish. We're very optimistic that, by continuing this effort, we're going to make a dent in those spawning fish, and hopefully this will add to the increase in recruitment of Yellowstone cutthroats back into the lake. I don't know. I wish I could look in a crystal. Maybe I don't know, wish I could look into a crystal ball, but we're doing all we can. And that's again, the beauty of Yellowstone Park Foundation. They've found so many funds, or they've found so much sources of funding to be able to tackle this issue. And it's such a hard issue, and they're faced with so many challenges. You know, the ice comes on that lake and stays on that lake long, and it's just a hard effort. And we've got a lot of volunteers working out there, a lot of young people, and a lot of technicians, and they're working their hind ends off trying to rectify this situation.
Now, the lake trout are fall spawners?
Yes, okay. And it's really interesting in terms of the areas where they're able to find, you know, their spawning areas, and how even sport fisheries, or sport fishermen that come out with, it's certainly not a fly fishing proposition, but these guys that come out with their downriggers and whatnot and big cannonballs, and boy, they're really making a dent in those fish too. They're really removing a lot of fish from that system.
There's no fly fishing opportunities for them when they're spawning then?
Very,
in shallow
very
areas.
Because they spawn so deep.
Oh, they still do deep. Okay.
Yeah, they're so deep when they spawn. Every now and then a fly fisherman will catch one, but it's not something that, you know, you go out there fishing for lake trout and hope to do well. You just don't catch them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With fly gear. It is just one of those issues that is ongoing, and I don't think it'll ever be totally eradicated. It's just one of those things that it's just going to be an ongoing program and a very expensive program. But when you consider the trophic event, if we lose the Yellowstone cutthroat and what that would mean going down from everything from grizzly bears who feed on them to you know, eagles to the angler, God, what a sad state it would be if we'd lose those cutthroat. And that's why so much effort and so much money is being put into the program.
Why were they originally, the lake trout were stocked in there, right?
Yeah, and there's, you know, a lot of people blame sport fishermen, but if you look at some of the stocking records, it looks like they were probably stocked, you know, nearly 100 years ago when they were stocking, you know, Lewis Lake and as they said in the reports, and lakes along the way. Well, I'm sure they dumped a few in Yellowstone, and there's even record of a lake trout hatchery there in on the Yellowstone River just below the lake. So they were in, you know, it doesn't make any sense to sit and point fingers. Everybody wants to blame, but the hard fact is they're there, and we got to do something about it, and we have been really successful in working on it.
Sounds like there's a lot of fish to deal with, I mean, considering all the netting you've been doing.
Yeah, a huge effort, but really what really tickles me is when you look at fly fishermen and the donations they've made and how they've stood up and really supported this program through their hard-earned money. It's really amazing to watch how fly fishermen will stand up and support projects like this. And they have really made a dent in this crucial effort that they're making by their funding, and that's why I say continue to send your donations right to the Yellowstone Park Foundation, because they'll put them to work.
Well, that's terrific. That's terrific. Well, we've run out of time, Craig. There's
only
a lot more to talk about. What?
I see. We only just started.
I know. We went through quite a bit, actually.
We did.
Maybe we can return and maybe talk about a particular section sometime or a particular area in the park, and kind of focus in now that we've got kind of a general coverage of the area.
I'd love to do that sometime.
Great, great. Well, let's stick with me here, Craig, and when we return, we'll be talking with Craig more about the giveaways that we're going to be having, and we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation Fly Fishers, that 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, and a copy of Craig Matthews' book, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide. So I hope you were listening, because I have a question in mind here, and we'll be looking for that correct answer. So stick with us. Just as Lance Armstrong says, live strong, there's a fly fishing organization that's helping women battle cancer to fish on. It's Reeling and Healing Midwest. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature and support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list, and to learn how you can support their retreats and interests, visit www.reelingandhealingmidwest.org. That's reelingandhealingmidwest.org. Or call them at 866-237-5725. 866-237-5725. Well, just a reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link at the bottom of our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. Winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our database. And if you did not register for that, it's too late now, but make sure you get registered for the next show. You don't want to miss any chances of winning any of these incredible prizes we have to offer. So if you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with the information on how to receive your gift. So first, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Five Fishers, and always a great gift to have. If you want to know more about the Federation of Five Fishers, go to www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. So I am going to do a random drawing here from our database. Our winner there is Fred McKenzie in Nova Scotia, Canada. Fred McKenzie. So congratulations, Fred. I know you'll enjoy that membership. And Federation is a worldwide organization, so no matter where you are, it'll be helpful to you. Okay, now, second winner for the one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine is Silas Gray. Silas Gray in Missouri. So, Silas, another great gift to receive. And if you want to learn more about Fly Fusion Magazine, go to www.flyfusionmag.com. Great magazine out of Calgary, Canada, with wonderful photography and great how-to type articles. And now, pose our question here for everybody. Remember, you have to go to our homepage, and there's that text box there where you put in your questions earlier tonight. That's the same text box you use to submit your answers to this question that I'm going to ask you. And by the way, speaking of questions throughout the night, I want to appreciate all the participation. I'm seeing now that we're just so many questions we just couldn't get to. Obviously, we're going to have another show and dig a little bit deeper on Yellowstone because we've definitely got a lot of interest. But I highly suggest this book that we're going to give away of Craig's. It's got all the hatch charts in it, maps of the different fisheries that are there, creeks, rivers, lakes, and tells you the types of flies and the time of the year that, the hatches are occurring. So that should be very helpful. And obviously, with that in hand and a little trip to or a phone call to Blue Ribbon Flies, you'll get what you need. So, Craig, I've got a question here, and hopefully we have somebody that was listening closely. But the question was asked is, there was one river that you would fish in Yellowstone, what would it be? And I'm looking for the name of that river that was Craig's favorite there, as if he only had one river to fish. So let's see if we had anybody that was really paying attention here. Oh, that was rather quick. Joel in Ranchester, Wyoming. He says the fire hole. Was that it, Craig?
There we go.
Got it. First one. Well, Joel, congratulations.
Yeah.
Him being in Wyoming, he ought to be able to use that book pretty quickly. Just have to get through this winter.
All the wind there.
Yeah. So Joel got to make a trip and use that book in Yellowstone. Joel, if you'll do me a favor and either through the same text box, send me your mailing address so that I can pass that on to Craig and we'll get that book out to you. Or you can email it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com, info@askaboutflyfishing.com, whichever you prefer. Well, Craig, I really appreciate you being with us tonight and sharing your knowledge. Obviously, we barely tapped into it, and that just lays the groundwork for another talk. So
well,
I hope you'll be willing to do that.
I sure look forward to it, and I appreciate your having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I'll have to drop in and see you next time I'm up there, which hopefully will be
I hope
summer.
So. And Joel, when you drop in, you're going to be tested on what you read, so make sure you read that book.
There you go. Well, our next broadcast will be on January 7th, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview Earl Waters, and our topic for the show will be giant Homosassa tarpon. Captain Earl Waters, a Florida native, has been chasing and catching the giant Homosassa tarpon for over 25 years. Learn his secrets on hooking up and landing these incredible trophies. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Platte River Fly Shop, Keeney's Fly Shop, and Power Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company might benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115 extension 2, and we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.